Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and we are approaching the fourth anniversary of the one and only, the legendary ScaryCast. This is Dr. John Stamey live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, where it's cold, but it's warm inside, and we've got great guests, great co-hosts, and a lot of good things to tell you about tonight. So the first person I would like to introduce is he's got a band. He's got several bands. He's got a lot of great things going on in he's our man in Hollywood, and he's got some news for us about COVID and everything. So take it away, Devin Tate, our man in Hollywood.
Hey, Dr. John and all my co-hosts here. It's so good to be here with you this evening on this great day when Los Angeles County is beginning to open back up again. So as of today, there's a whole list of businesses that are allowed to reopen, including restaurants can have indoor dining again at 25%, but, you know, it's a start. So moving in the right direction. And on a personal note, I got my first vaccine shot on Friday. So I'm going back on the April 2nd to get the second shot. And I've already bought
a plane
ticket.
Oh, congratulations, Devin. That's great.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited. It really, really feels like the start of a new day here.
Well, that's wonderful. We're glad that you're getting vaccinated and you can get out and there's new life in Hollywood, correct?
Exactly. And we had a big rainstorm this morning, so everything's clean and fresh right now.
Well, that's good. That must mean something wonderful. Well, that's absolutely great. Our next co-host, a newer co-host, but one of our more entertaining people that we've ever had, the Surgeon General, not only of Murder 123, but the new Surgeon General of ScaryCast, the one and only Dr. Trey Donaway. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing fine, John. It is a nice, cool night in South Carolina. We were just getting used to that 75, 80-degree weather, and everyone said, oh, is it summer? It's not summer yet. It's still spring, and it's still chilly and nice, so we're not in summer yet.
Yeah, well, we're glad to have you here. And now you and your wife participated in something kind of wonderful this past weekend. In fact, I was privileged to come by and watch what you were doing a little bit. Tell us about it.
Well, we've got a little town right outside of Camden, South Carolina. That was it dates back to the 1750s, actually almost as old as Camden. And Margaret Buckaloo is a friend, and she is trying to breathe a little life back into that town. She does a series of tours called Long Gone Tours, and she takes you on different places that are long gone in South Carolina. And she was on a service project cleaning up a little cemetery that's been there since the 18th century. We found two gravestones that we did not know about, and they were both dated back to the 1850s. So antebellum cemetery. And after 6 hours of working, yanking vines and cutting things, I decided I didn't want to do any more volunteering for a few days. I went to bed, and I just emerged this morning.
Gotcha. Well, that sounds like it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed coming by there and seeing that beautiful, beautiful restaurant that you had taken over, and you had this wonderful fundraiser. So it was absolutely magnificent. I'm glad you were out there doing it. And
and
I know you had a good
job. Jane, my wife Jane was the chef, and she did a shepherd's pie. No shepherds were injured during any part of the pie making. But it was outstanding, and she's never cooked for 40 people before, but she did. And because we're using a commercial kitchen, she'd never done that before. Enormous skillets, enormous pots and pans, and she cooked as well on big skillets as she does on little ones. So it was a very nice Friday night with a band and a little fundraising to clean up the cemetery. So it was a very nice weekend.
Well, that's great. We're glad you had a good time, and I'm sure more good things will come from that. So thanks, and we're certainly here. The queen of ScaryCast is here, Robin McCray. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing great. Glad to talk to everybody and hear everybody's voices again, and it sounds like things are going great everywhere, which is nice.
That's right, and I think I heard from a good friend of mine. In fact, our guest next week is Jen Cruz, and she said, "You know, John, I'm going to be on a panel or at a conference with Robin McCrae and Igor Burtsev. Tell us about that event out in Nebraska."
Yeah, we're really excited about it. Harriet McFeely, who owns and runs the Bigfoot Museum in Nebraska, has very graciously extended the offer to pay our expenses so that we can come speak at the conference. So we're extremely excited about that. In fact, she's been gracious enough to bring my husband, Pat, as well. And we're going to have an absolute ball. We've got a lot to talk about, lots to show. I can't wait to see Jen. Haven't seen her in a while since we did conferences with you, so I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be really good. She's got a great panel.
Well, that's wonderful. I know you're going to have a good time out there. And now, the Amazing Velvet is not with us tonight. He was getting a little bit of surgery done, and so we hear that he's doing well. He will be back with us next week. What a great guy, and always checking in on him, making sure he's okay. We've got a couple, ScaryCast got a couple things coming up. First of all, the Carolina Wrestling Hall of Fame, that's going to be June 15th in Charleston, or actually North Charleston, at the Holy City Brewery. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have great guests like Papa Stroh, Susan Green, Tony Rose, some of the most famous wrestlers of all time, Tommy Rich. So please, everybody, come out and join us. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're going to be there. We're excited.
Well, that's right. And then, well, of course, everybody on ScaryCast is invited to be at the ScaryCast table. And then we've got, on the first weekend in June, we've got the Lizard Man Festival in North Myrtle Beach at Dirty Don's Oyster Bar. It's a beautiful restaurant. It started out as a little tiny thing in Myrtle Beach, and now it is a gorgeous place. So please come out and join us. Your host will be myself and Doug Kelly. It's going to be a lot of fun out there. And then, of course, I can't fail to announce the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference is scheduled, and it looks like it might happen this year on the 16th and 17th of October in Kingsport, Tennessee. Robin, that will be of special interest to you. So we hope to have everybody out there, and it'll be a blast. And more events. We probably will have two more events added on to this year, and then we'll maybe get to our normal full schedule next year. But it'll be great to have everybody there. I hope the whole ScaryCast crew can join us for all the events that they can. And so now it's time to introduce what I have to call one of the nicest and sweetest guests we've ever had. We had her on about 2 years ago, and it was a lot of fun, so I thought it was time to bring her back on. She's from Canada. She's considered, and I know she'll blush a little bit, but she's considered one of the leading experts on the little people in the world. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give a big round of ScaryCast applause, and I'll put my phone down so I can do it too, to Robin Moonshadow. And how are you doing tonight,
Yay.
Robin?
Yay.
Welcome, Robin.
Thank you. I did right.
Well, we're so glad to have you. And I told everybody in the green room that I wanted to ask you two quick questions because I wanted to get them on tape. You have been very helpful in my upcoming book, my book that's coming out within a couple weeks. It's called The Lizard Man Companion. And you had two stories about Lizard Man. I want to ask you about the first one, if you don't mind telling it. It's about the Lizard Man in Vietnam. Now, that's an exciting thought, Lizard Man in Vietnam. And I think that comes from one of your friends' grandfathers who was in the Vietnam War. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So what's the scoop?
As she told me, when her father was in the Vietnam War, they were told that there were lizard people in an area. So they were tasked with going in and hunting them down, and they ended up chasing them into a cave. and you know, killing them all.
Well, now let me add a few details. First of all, they ran across two of them, I believe, as you told me, and then they chased
mm-hmm.
and we believe they got into this legendary large cave that actually has a river running through it, which is now a tourist attraction, and it got rediscovered in 1991. But in the Vietnam War, they went in there, and am I correct that they were encircled by a group of lizard men?
That's right. There was quite a few of these lizard men or lizard people in this cave when they chased these other lizard men into it. It wasn't just him. I mean, there was witnesses. You know, during the Vietnam War, you tended not to go to places by yourself. You wanted to get lost or you'd get ambushed. So you'd go in pairs or in small groups. So there were other witnesses to this as well.
Wow. And so they got in there and they just opened fire with their machine guns because
opened fire
I believe
on them, yeah,
that
they were a threat.
As you told me, they were terrified.
They were. They were terrified of these lizard men. And I questioned her. I said, could it be that they had the skin disorder that makes your skin really scaly and flaky? And she says, no. Lizard people.
Wow. That's amazing. That's an incredible thing. And I wanted to get it on tape because that's one of the two stories that I've got by you in the Lizard Man Companion. The other one that I've got, I believe it came from your grandfather, and it's about a family of mermaids. Is that correct?
That is. It came from my grandfather, yeah.
Where was he coming back from?
I don't remember, but they were in Vietnam. And what they would do is they would throw the fishing nets over the side of the boat to catch fish for supper, you know, for a change. And they did this every day. And in one of these days, they caught a baby. And it was very much how you would think a mermaid would look. From the waist down, it was a tail, and from the waist up, it was human. It was a beautiful little baby, he said, dark hair. Just beautiful. And it was a good baby, I guess. And they had it for about a day, give or take, and the mother appeared. And she started crying and crying for her baby, and she didn't stop. It was just continuously crying. And she followed them for days, begging to have her baby given back. And she just cried and wailed and cried. And on one of these occasions, a male appeared, and he was quite horrible looking.
Yeah, I don't think they're all as pretty as they always say they are.
No, I don't think so either.
Wow.
But after a few days of this here, they gave the baby back. They put it into one of those life rescue boats that they had on the side of their boats, and they pushed it out and gave the baby back. And she reached in, took the baby out of the boat, and they disappeared. They just went right back into the water.
Right.
They never saw them again.
Now, tell you what, Robin, you might be getting a little far afield from your phone. Get a little closer, please.
Oh, sorry.
Perfect. So anyway, the men caught a baby mermaid, and mm-hmm. then the mermaid mother was there wanting her back, and then
and cried for days. It was just nonstop.
What
All
were they
right.
planning
and
to
so
do
they,
with
they,
the,
they gave
the baby?
They gave the baby back.
Yeah, they gave the baby back. I don't know what they were planning on doing it, but with this baby, I would assume maybe selling it, since that was the order of the day. But back then, every time you discover something really cool, well, let's sell it. Let's make a fortune.
I'm glad they gave it back.
Oh, my. I think they would be in an awful lot of trouble if they didn't.
And Robin Lynn, it sounds like you've had experience with mermaids before.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
You know,
Lynn.
Years ago,
Robin with an I.
Yeah, years ago, and I'm talking like this was probably back in 2000, I want to say 13 or 14. So, I mean, it's been a while. But we, you know, as everybody knows, I mind speak, and I was talking with the Bigfoots, and they had some big issue, and they kept telling me I needed to contact the mermaids. And I said, okay, listen, you know, you guys have had me contact all these crazy things. Now you want me to do, the ETs apparently weren't bad enough. Now I got to go and talk to the mermaids. And with mind speak, all you do is focus on what you want to talk to. And if it will talk, then it will respond. But, I mean, it's not hard to connect with. It doesn't mean everything will talk, but if that's what you're trying to do, that's how you go about it. So I did it, and I found out that every time, and every time since then that I've actually been able to mind speak with a mermaid, I get the worst fishy taste in my mouth. It just grosses me out because I don't like fish. And yet I feel like I've done nothing but eat raw fish every single time. You have like a salty taste and a fishy taste in your mouth. It's just horrid. And, you know, the ones that I spoke with were nice. I didn't have any, you know, I think there's a couple of them that were a little bit more standoffish. But for the most part, they were okay. I didn't have any issues other than that awful taste. It's just terrible.
And now we know. It's like the favorite book was funny. I was up at an event actually at Dirty Don's Oyster Bar, and there was a gentleman who had written a book about Anne Bonny, the first female pirate. And he said, "Well, John, tell me about the whole deal, what's going on with it?" And the first thing I said was, those pirate boats were filthy. They never cleaned them. I mean, once they were on there, they never did. And I described the amount of dirt and everything that was on there, and it was just so funny. He said, you know, it's really interesting that you say that, because my research shows you're 100% correct. I've never really thought about how dirty pirate ships were, but they were filthy. And there you go. And I understand.
Right.
And I got this horrible thing, kind of like you got with the mermaids or the mer people or the fish people.
Well, you know, the one, I did say to one, I said, can you tell me why every time I talk to any of your people, I taste fish? And she said, I don't know why you taste fish. She says, I ate a squid. Okay. Well, I mean, I've never been able to taste a squid, so I don't know. But she was rather indignant about it. She said, "You shouldn't. I don't know why you're tasting fish. I eat squid." I said, okay.
Well, I mean, I like fried squid. Trey, do you like?
Oh yeah, I like calamari
like
too.
I've never had it.
No, but
so I have
I
no
know
idea.
I know. We ate some seabird once in Iceland. Puffins. You know, the cute little birds, puffins?
Yeah.
And they taste like fish. So you
Ooh.
Are what you eat, and maybe
yep.
you taste what you talk to. I don't know.
Apparently. It was funny. I was just like, I was shocked. And it was the Bigfoots were the ones that had me contact her. Something about there was, and it was so crazy because the stuff they were telling me, they're like, you know, we had a spell put on us, and we have to have the spell removed, and the only way you can do it is to contact the mermaids, because the mermaids can tell you how to do it. And I'm like, wait a minute, just back it up here, you know. No, you have to do this. And I'm like, okay, so I reach out to these mermaids, and afterwards I'm thinking, God, I just feel like I drank a fish tank. It was just horrid, that smell that you get, like if you breathe in the fumes off the fish tank. And I thought, good Lord, you know, and it never got any better. And so the one I talked to, I said, I just don't understand why I keep tasting this fishy smell. And she was not happy. She's like, I don't know why you would have that. She said, I ate a squid. And I'm like, oh, okay.
That sounds like a funny story, Robin. Sometimes, you know, I'll say this, some of your stories, they do sound quite fantastic, but they always have a ring of truth. But I just ate a squid. Nobody would say that. That's the truth.
I know. I mean, you know, and I never saw anything about it. I just want to know why. I mean, you know, certain things, like when I talk to the ETs a lot, I get a real metallic-y taste in my mouth. You know, the Bigfoots, I don't.
Okay.
Really experience a lot of that. Some of them I'll get a little bit of a smell that I can smell off of them. Not a lot. It just depends on their, you know, the individual. But yet every time I've tried to talk to a mermaid, it's the same. It doesn't matter if it's a male, a female, a child, or whatever. It smells like breathing in a fish tank. But it was so comical because I just wanted to know why. I was like, why do you guys keep letting me taste this fishy smell? And I didn't eat fish. I ate a squid. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to upset you.
Well, I mean, what can you say? All right, well, I'd like to open up the conversation because we sent out a little bit of information that Robin Moonshadow had put together. I'd like to just say, Devin, Robin, and Trey, start asking Robin questions. She's got really a lot of knowledge, and I think people are going to enjoy it. So I'm just going to open. The floor is open.
Well, I'll start. This is Devin, and I, when Trey mentioned that he had eaten puffin in Iceland, I've done that too. But I also remember in Iceland that they have a very high degree of reverence for the, you know, magical people and the elves, I think, as they refer to them. So I just wondered if you had studied any of that or heard any of the stories from Iceland. I know they take it so seriously there that they will, you know, reroute traffic or plan the roadways if they're going to go through a, you know, habitat for those magical people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it. Over there, they have the invisible people and the unseen people. Well, they can't tell you what they look like, but they're unseen. And then they have the elves. And, of course, there's the two types of elves. There's the tall elves and then the little elves. And, of course, in Norse mythology, dwarves are the ones who made Thor's hammer. And when Loki was pulling one of his pranks and cut off Thor's wife's long golden hair, he had to go and see them about making her a headpiece, or Thor would have just, you know, thumped him into oblivion. And that's how Thor's hammer came to be. Now, for the two types of elves that they have, they also have light elves who they live above ground, and they're like the Lord of the Rings elves, so like J.R.R. Tolkien, all of those ideas came from around all of this type of mythology. And then you have the little elves that are like Keebler elves. And they're only a couple of feet high. And there is a story from Pennsylvania about a gentleman that when he was a little boy, and they went to a park for the day, and he wandered off, and he was just looking at the trees and the foliage and whatnot, and he came across the little boy on a stump playing a flute. And it was, he said, most beautiful little boy he'd ever seen, just very predominant bright green eyes. And he said even his voice was strange. There was almost like a whistle to his voice. And we'll say the little elven boy asked this little other little boy if he wanted to stay and play with him. Now, this little boy knew that this other little boy was a little bit different, so not quite like us. But he wasn't afraid or anything. He just said he couldn't stay to play, and he had to get back to his parents. So then years later, when he went back to this park as an adult, he found stones, these very shiny stones left on that same stump. And he knew that they were for him. He'll never forget it. It took him years to talk about it. But they do, they take elves and even gnomes quite serious. Because for them, it's not just folk tales. This is a form of religion for them, or spiritualism, like it is an island with fairies and other little people.
Do you think there's a correlation between volcanic activity and places that have a lot of volcanic activity? Because I know Iceland is, you know, highly volcanic, and I believe New Zealand is also a place where there's been lots of, you know, reported activity of, like, you know, fairies and elves and stuff. So I'm wondering if that might be connected.
Well, it could be. It's warm. And so 90% of all little people live underground. That's to keep them safe away from us. And, of course, it's warmer there. They also have little people there. I might be pronouncing this wrong. I don't have the pronunciation in front of me. It's Tuapeya is what they call their little people. They're quite fair-skinned, and they have red hair, which is much like the original peoples, as I'm told. And one of the stories was a gentleman was in New Zealand visiting a friend of his, and they got up one morning about 6 o'clock in the morning to go fishing, and they were walking down a winding path, and he kept hearing laughing and giggling. And it was quite foggy, so here we got the whole scene set. You're going fishing in the morning, and it's still fog sticking on the ground. And you're hearing laughing and giggling in the fog. And he says to his friend, "Do you hear that?" And his friend says, "Yeah, it's just the little people. Let's just keep moving." But it followed him down. So apparently they come down out of the higher areas at night to just play amongst the fog and into the greenery and watch people and just play around because they're very lighthearted little people. And all these little people, with the exception of a couple of the nasty ones, love kids. And they're all very lighthearted, and they have a terrible temper, especially gnomes. Gnomes have a terrible temper, very quick-tempered. And, like, there's different types of proto-pygmies as well as what we call them, and that's to separate them from, like, the fairies, like little winged people. So then we know the difference. Okay, we have native or indigenous little people. We have them all across North America. Excuse me. I woke up with a cold this morning. Please excuse me. And they look like little Native Americans or for me, First Nations. In Australia, we have the little indigenous people. And so they're the indigenous peoples. And then we have the hairy little people. That's for here, they are called the Maymay-Gawessing. I do have a picture of one on my trail camera. It was nice enough to let itself get taken. They're very primitive looking. They're not baby Bigfoot. I know they're mistaken for baby Bigfoot a lot because they're hairy. You know, they're about 3 feet tall, but they're very primitive looking in the face. And there's little hairy people like this all over the place. I'm in Mexico. There's a farmhouse that's just besieged with them. And this was a couple of years ago. I don't know what came out of that. But these little hairy people were going in and raiding farms and taking pets and chickens and things like that and eating them. Because these hairy little ones are a bit of a menace sometimes. Even with the Maymay-Gawessing, I'm very careful of even how, if I think they're in the area of how I speak to them, I am kind and courteous, and I am grateful. Thank you for leaving me these little footprints to cast. The one time I didn't, I had little rocks thrown at me from the bushes. Oh, thank you. And that day I left them 2 granola bars to say thank you and apologize because, you know, they're very big on manners. And then elves and then dwarves and trolls, goblins, they're kind of the subcategories. I don't hear a lot about them, but they're more subhuman as opposed to very human as the other ones.
Okay, now Robin, have you ever physically seen these little people?
I have seen one. When I was 9 years old, and he had a green tint to his skin, and he is called a Nanako. He lived in between the walls of my aunt and uncle's house. I've seen him 3 times one summer, but I never seen him again. The first time that I had saw him, I had gone upstairs to use the bathroom. Now, my aunt and uncle's house didn't have running water, so we had to use a pail, and we just pulled the curtain across. So I was up there doing my business, and I could see directly into my aunt's bedroom. And I saw something move from behind the pile of clothes. And I thought maybe it was the cat, or maybe their little dog, but I think I thought it was the cat. And wasn't the cat. He just, you know, just come out. He stood up, and he had the green tint to him. He had a little pot belly. You know, he did have hair on him. He wasn't hairy, but he had tufts on his hair. And his hands were a bit disproportioned to the rest of his body, so he had quite large hands. I didn't see his feet, but he had a green tint to him. So I just finished my business and went downstairs, and I didn't say nothing at first. And on my way home, I told my mother about the little guy that I'd seen. She didn't believe me at first. I remember being, you know, kind of angry. Why don't you believe me? What, you know, why don't you believe me? So, you know, my aunt was aware that he was there. So then I'm talking to my cousins again, and I'm telling them, you know, you guys got this little green guy in your house. They know all about it. At night when they go to bed and they would leave their candy or chips or pop drinks, whatever, onto the floor, he would come out and get them and eat them because they love sugary stuff. So they knew all about it. So the second time that I saw him, my cousin, my girl cousin and I were up above in the attic, so it would be above the garage. Now, this is where she hid her stuff. She didn't want her brother to find or get. And we were looking at her stuff, and she kind of nods her head. And so I turn around to look, and the same little guy is in between the outside wall and the inside wall, kind of peeking around at us. And he just pops his head back in, and that was it. Now, the third time I saw him, we again at my cousin's house, and we had another cousin over visiting, and we were out at the corner of the house playing with the dog. The dog was on a chain. So we're playing with the dog, and my cousin says, there he is. There he is again. So we all looked, and we saw him. You know, he was standing out just from the corner of the wall, so we could see him pretty good. And the cousin that was visiting, it scared him so bad, started crying. And I remember this like it was yesterday. I mean, he had, like, Niagara Falls tears, like, streaming down his face. He was crying. It scared him so bad. He went running to his mother and, you know, like, grab her leg and we're saying, you know, he's not going to hurt you. He's not going to do anything, but he did. And he was so upset. He was just terrified. I was like, you know, why are you crying? There's a little guy at the side of the house and stuff like this. And, you know, we were laughing at him. I'm sure he didn't find it funny, but, you know, it was okay.
Now, how old do you, in other words, if you had to correlate the little guy that you saw to a human in some number of years, was it 6 or 7 or 15 or 40 or 80? I mean, what do you think that you saw? What age of a gnome did you see?
Well, he's called a Nymical. He's not a gnome. And he wouldn't even be considered an indigenous person, but he was one of these little people, and I'm sure their skin is that color because of what they eat. I'm just going to make a wild guess about how old he would be just by his appearance, because he didn't appear to be very old. Like, not like a baby or a toddler or anything like that. He was only about 2 feet high. I would say that he's probably 50. In human age, he'd probably be about 45, 50 years old. He looked older,
okay,
but not old. If they age like we do, and I would assume to some degree that they do.
Okay, so you have had experience seeing little people, and I don't know many people that have. To you, was it frightening? Was it interesting? What
What's the one word that describes your experience seeing the little people?
At 9 years old, it was wow and weird. I just kind of accept things the way that they are. I mean, odd things have always happened to me. So I just considered it one of those things.
Robin,
we were aware of little people like we were aware of Bigfoot and all these other things because we're First Nations. I grew up listening to all these stories. You just don't expect to see them. Like, I didn't find him frightening at all. I thought that he was very harmless and very, I don't know, benign. He seemed to me like he was shy, curious, and probably a kind soul. But with my cousins, it wasn't a big deal for them because they saw him on and off all the time. But the adults didn't see him. My aunt was aware that he was there because she could hear him shuffling around upstairs and stuff, but she never saw him. It was just us kids.
Robin, this is Trey. When you say the adults didn't see them, were they unable to see them? Would the children be able to see this entity? Were the adults in the same room couldn't, or they just were never in a situation where they had the opportunity to see them?
Yeah, they weren't in a situation where they had the opportunity to see them.
Okay.
But that's how this particular little person is they prefer children to adults. Even the First Nation stories that we have here about them and into Connecticut, it's the same way. They would prefer to let kids see them more than adults. But see, that could go back to when the first Europeans came to North America. They saw the little people as like devils and imps and would shoot at them and try to kill them. And after a while, these little people just said, we've had enough. And they left. And we see something similar in Alaska with the urchin rack there. They used to live side by side with the Inuit there. And one of the last stories, it was the mother, father, and little boy of little people. You can imagine how tiny he would be. You know, as we would say knee-high to a grasshopper, but he was just very tiny. And while Mom and Dad were over here doing some trading with the Inuits, he wanders off to play with the dog, and the dog kills him. And Mom and Dad says, that's it, we've had enough. And they go off and to the mountain with the rest of their people. And this is what they say today, is that these little people, these little urchin rack, you know, there's some around, but the majority live in the mountain there. I get a lot of stories, firsthand accounts of urchin rack. I just gotten one 3 weeks ago, actually. The gentleman was just taking a walk down by a creek or a river, and he saw one down there just taking a walk. But there are plenty of stories like that where people will go fishing and they'll see them fishing off the bank with little poles, or maybe they'll have a net. And as soon as they see us, they kind of wander off. Another, you know what, she contacted me to tell me that her and her sister, and this was about 4 years ago, give or take a little bit, her and her sister were coming back from bingo one night, and they saw an urchin rack getting water out of the side of a building from a tap in a sealskin. And as soon as the lights from the car hit them, you know, he took off. And the Inuit are very open about these little people. It's fantastic.
Now, for those of us that don't remember, the Inuit are ... Please give us an explanation of that again.
Inuit Eskimos who live in Alaska and in parts of Canada here, especially up in Nunavut. Up in the colder regions in Alaska. They're the indigenous people, yeah.
and they have experienced the little people for centuries.
Yeah, just as long as First Nations and Native Americans have. Well, see,
okay.
We have stories now, going back that say, you know, when we first arrived here, meaning North America, there was all kinds of things here, including little people. And little people would help us. These stories are like our oral histories and our traditions, so it's important to get them right when you tell them, so then they're passed down to the next generation.
This is so interesting, because these stories have been around the globe, correct? I mean, there
yes.
are stories from every country about the little people.
Yes, yes, yeah. In Hawaii, they have the mini hone. And here we have a variety, of course. In Japan, they're called a kappa. In China, they're called something else. But anywhere where there is people, you have little people. This is just how we evolved.
Okay, this
and gnomes,
is amazing.
Gnomes
now,
are another big Icelandic thing, too, but gnomes are a very large family. I mean, you never think of a leprechaun as being a gnome, but they are. They are in that family. Other than their beards, they're the same.
And they have sewn clothes and everything, right?
Yep, the gnomes, whatever they choose, they're craftsmen, so whatever they choose to craft, they will be the best at it because it's handed down for generations. I mean, even the style of their hair says something about who they are. I mean, you wear a ponytail, or two braids on each side, it means you're unmarried. A married woman might pin her hair up or wear it in a single braid in the back. And this is really interesting because with a lot of these, we'll say, hair traditions, you see that as well in the it's my ancestors. Not so much today, unless they're a bit more traditional. But hair is a big importance as well. They're very traditional and with gnomes. They're very traditional people. Now, everybody wants to hear about the leprechauns, especially the clericons, because they're hilarious. Okay, there are the leprechauns,
now,
and then they're cousins, the clericons, and they are like the black sheep of the family. Okay, these are the ones, they're the ones that perfect beer. So from Monday to Friday, they'll make this beer. And then Friday night they drink it, and they will get drunk. And we're talking plastered drunk. Like, fall down drunk. And these are the ones that cause the mischief and the havoc. They will ride, you know, dogs and sheep, and they'll ride them right into the night until they fall off or pass over the ditch. And of all the leprechaun stories, this is what you hear. There's only a few where people have actually been able to catch them off guard. Most of them, they'll find them sleeping. I'm like, that's a clericon. He was probably passed out. That's how you got him. But they carry two pouches, a silver and a gold. And I'll just go round this up here. So whatever you want, silver or gold, they'll give you that. Then while you're looking at your coin, they'll get away. They'll just escape. They'll be gone. You can't take your eyes off them. So as I've mentioned a few times, the best way to find a leprechaun is Sundays. Sunday morning.
Is what? Sunday morning.
Sunday morning.
Yeah, Sunday mornings that you'll catch a clericon, because they'll be the ones passed out in the ditch from drinking all weekend.
Okay. All right, now, Robin Moonshadow, I've got a question I want to ask Robin McCrae. Because
for
a while, Robin told me that a lot of the disappearances of objects around my place where I live were due to the little people. Do you remember that, Robin McCrae?
Yep. You've got a bunch of them down there. I've got a ton of them up here. And my friend in Texas has a bunch of them at her house.
Well, I mean, why do I have a bunch? When you talk about I have a bunch of them up here, are we talking about in the Grand Strand in Myrtle Beach or around my house or inside? What?
Well, you've got a couple of them that go in your house. That's why they keep taking everything you own and you can't find it for hours at a time.
Okay. Now, Trey Donaway, I've got a question to ask of Trey and a question to ask of Devin. Have you ever experienced small things disappearing and then they reappear? Devin first and then Trey next. Have you ever had that experience?
I definitely have. You know, when you're sure that you know exactly where you left something and it's not there, and then later it's somehow there again. It definitely has happened to me several times.
All right. Dr. Trey, the Surgeon General, what about you?
No, I'd leave something and I'd absolutely know where it was. Absolutely know where it was. And then when I'd go by to find it, it wouldn't be there. And then eventually I'd find it, and then I'd remembered I put it there instead of where I was sure I put it. But I've never experienced, other than through carelessness, misplacing things. I don't think I've ever had anything move on me.
Okay. I had the most amazing thing happen, and I renewed that story this weekend with Mike McIntyre. When I was a professor, I lost my keys one Monday. It was Monday morning, and I couldn't find my keys. And I always put my keys in one of two places. They're either on even where I live now, or when I had my house, they were either right next to the door, or they were on the small table next to my bed. And they weren't there. I had the police from the university come over. They tried to help me find them. We couldn't find them. They had to take me out. They had to take me to school that day. It was unbelievable. I had three groups of people look for my keys. The reason was it was going to cost me about $400 to have a locksmith come over there and retool everything and to get a brand new key to the car. I mean, you know, what was I going to do? So I had three people and the police. And then I finally asked Mike McIntyre, who's my best friend. I said, Mike, just please come over here and make sure I'm not crazy. He said, all right, well, stand where you saw them the last time. And I kind of pointed my finger at the small table next to my bed. He said, and he took his hand, he put it on it, and he took it right down, and there they were. They had reappeared. Now, I don't know what to say. I had police and three groups of people try to look for them, and then all of a sudden they reappeared. And Mike certainly was not in my place. What?
That's a strange occurrence. Yeah. Now, I will tell you, though, as a freshman in college, we had one roommate. We were in a temporary triple, which meant we were in a triple all year. But one guy would insist on getting up early and taking a shower and making all this noise, while my other roommate and I would always try to sleep to the very last. So when he'd be making all this noise, he'd be going out down to the bathroom to shower and get dressed for the day. We used to hide his fraternity pledge pin because he'd always put it in one drawer so we'd always know where it was. And we'd hide the pin, and then we'd pretend we were sleeping. And then he would leave after rummaging around, couldn't find it, and then we'd put it right back where it used to be. And because if you were caught without your pledge pin, if you're pledging a fraternity, then they'd, you know, smack you, or you'd get in trouble with your fraternity brothers. But we used to do that quite a lot.
Oh, dear God, you get in trouble, yes. Yeah.
He never did figure that out. But we used to do that constantly to him. And he would be distracted, and he'd think he left it someplace else. And I guess we were acting as the little people, little funny freshman people.
Congratulations. But, yeah, as an adult, I mean, I had several times when I absolutely could not find something, and it reappeared. And Robin Moonshadow, would you say that was probably the little people?
Well, when it comes to things disappearing, yeah, they pull pranks all the time. They pull pranks pretty good. And the other thing, of course, it could be is a poltergeist. sometimes with a poltergeist that might turn up in another place that you know it didn't, you didn't even go in that room. Like with keys, for example, like lots of times people, when they come home, they put their keys directly onto the counter or maybe in a bowl by the door.
The same place
that's
over
their,
and over,
that's,
correct?
That's their routine, right? And
yeah.
I've heard cases where they'll go and they'll find their keys on the bed. They weren't even in their bedroom. Things like that. Like that's little people. And if it's a poltergeist, you won't find it, or it will turn up. If it was in an apartment building and here's a poltergeist thing, and it is with keys, the keys turned up down at the end of the hall in somebody else's apartment. Yeah, that wouldn't be little people doing that. That would be a poltergeist. But if it's turning back up like that, that sounds like a prank little people are playing. I have a friend in Toronto. He was making chili, and some of his thyme or the spice thyme, was on the counter. That was gone. So we go over the usual culprits. I said, do you have rats in your building? He says, no. I said, well, has other things come up missing? He's like, chocolate. I'm like, yeah, they love chocolate. And sometimes what they'll do, if they take something, they might give something back to you that they think is valuable. But they do pull pranks right, left, and center.
Now, Robin McCray, does that not sound like some of your friends in your yard, namely the Bigfoot?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I actually have physically seen the little people out there. We have this, one of my rescue dogs is out there. And he's extremely large. He's part Pyrenees, and he's massive. Like, you could put a pony saddle on him.
Oh, he's beautiful,
and
too.
Yeah, he is. And he got out one night, and he was running around, and I happened to look briefly out the window as he went whizzing by, and I went, okay, great, he's back, because he had taken off and run around. I went out there, and I saw this little person playing with him and climbing on him. And I started to open the door, and I put my hand on the knob, and I saw it, so I let go of the knob, and I didn't even open the door, and I just watched, because on the side of, and John has seen this, and at my front door, I have glass panels on either side of the heavy door, so I'm just, like, peeking out there. I watched it, you know, and I'm like, oh, my God, and they were having a ball. He was climbing up and down on the side of the dog, and the dog would turn around, jerk his head around like he was trying to, you know, figure out who was climbing on him, and then he'd jump around, and he'd bark at him, and this little person would run around to the other side. I mean, it was hysterical. And I've seen that on more than one occasion. That, and I know they get in the house because I've seen them ripping through the house.
Oh, yeah. They'll do that, too. I mean, most little people love animals, especially the gnomes. They
yeah.
love animals. And they love, and they love all
okay.
animals, like woodland gnomes. They'll look after, you know, woodland animals like deer. If they're hurt, they will look after them. It doesn't matter, birds and whatnot. They will look after. They love animals. So it doesn't surprise me at all. And he's a Pyrenees. They are big, beautiful dogs. I mean, that's like a horse to them, like a Clydesdale.
Oh, yeah. And that's
like
what they were doing. He was trying to get on his back.
Do these little people communicate? Do they speak a language that's intelligible? Do they... How do they communicate, or do they just not bother to communicate with humans?
Oh, they do. They do communicate with us quite a bit. It's just we don't hear about it because as soon as you start talking about little people or proto-pygmies, then you're automatically accused of seeing things or you're crazy, but this isn't the case. Way back, they would help First Nations people the great chief, Counting Coup. They helped him become a great chief. And with Crow First Nations, their little people are just, you don't mess with them, but they're some of my favorites because they're tactful. Okay, and it's a story that the Sioux and the Crow share. So, you know, way back when.
And you can mind speak with them. They'll mind speak if you try to talk to them.
Okay. And it's my phone, too. My phone is a bit crackly. Way back when, before first European contact, of course, you know, we would perform raids on each other's tribes. This was just a part of our life. and the Sioux was going to go into the Crow First Nations territory. And, of course, that wasn't going to happen. And the story that they share is of the Nurumbi. And the Sioux call them by a different name, but the Crow First Nation called them Nurumbi. So the Sioux is going into an invader territory. So this starts a fight. And these little people, the Nurumbi, fight side by side with the Crow. And they just dispatch Sioux warriors right, left, and center. I mean, pretty good for something that's only 2 feet tall. They would disable people so they couldn't fight, which means other people from the tribe would be forced to look after them. They would kill the horses. They would run off with the women and kids and, you know, leave them stranded out in the middle of nowhere. So then you have other people happen to go find all these missing people out in the middle of the night, wandering around. So they're very tactful, and they're very protective of these little people. And the remainder of them are said to live in Montana up in the hills, and you're supposed to ask for permission to go there, or they will throw rocks and sticks at you, and they will set little traps for you. So they do communicate.
Okay.
There's a few stories of people getting lost in Mexico. A gentleman said that he had been lost for a few days in the deep jungle, and one of these little people took him back to his tribe. So he had a tribe of little people, and they took care of him for a few days because he was dehydrated, and they led him out of the jungle. So they helped him, and there was plenty of stories like that. Another one is where there was three people, and their four-wheeler had gotten stuck in the mud, and the little people or the little person come out, and he just looked disgusted because he was apparently hunting because he had his bow and arrow with him, and it must have disturbed his hunt, and he helped them get the four-wheeler unstuck. So then they could be on the way. They said that he just seemed disgusted, a little aggravated by them, so like that. And they do say, and nobody believes this. Now, these little buggers are fast. It's like I tell people all the time, if you think you've seen a little person out of the corner of your eye, you probably have. Because they do watch us. I mean, like with the leprechauns and some of these other little people, they will watch over your family for generations, like your guardians.
Okay, Robin,
language,
you chatter. I've got a question for you, and it's an important, and I think it's a question about the sheer existence of leprechauns. And this is the argument that I give everybody about the existence of Bigfoot, and the existence of every everything else, all these legendary creatures. And I want everyone listening to this show loud and clear to hear this. If they didn't exist, why do we have the myth?
That's right. And understand we have continents of people who never spoke to each other until, you know, we started making boats and going to these areas. We all have these stories of the little people. So they didn't just come from one place. We all have them. Since time immemorial, we all have them.
We do. There are amazing stories, and this is something that I've collected and I've never shared, but there are amazing stories down in northeast Georgia about little people. And, you know, I've never really cared to share them because I'm thrilled enough that every time I go down to northeast Georgia to a community called Lakemont, and I stay in an Airbnb, they always come out and greet me. The Bigfoot do. Something strange happens that I can't explain. So it's like, and I know there are little people up there. There's been talks about them, but everybody just talks about it quietly and goes on. So now comes the big. I want to do a round table. Ask your most
your biggest question to Robin Moonshadow, and I'm going to be the first one, and then we're going to go to Robin McRae, then we're going to go to Trey, and then we're going to go to Devin. So my question is this. I'm here in my little one-bedroom place in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I wouldn't mind seeing some of the green people. I wouldn't mind them coming in and playing for me. You know, they're musical instruments. I really wouldn't. As long as they're not too frightening, I wouldn't mind them coming in. How do I ask them?
Well, first off, you have to make friends with them first, and they have to like you because they're quite picky about, you know, who they're going to talk to.
Okay.
And the question about the language, they speak their native language. I know for the indigenous little people here in North America, because I've actually heard them speak it. That was in the Smoky Mountains 2 years ago. And I heard them, and I could make only a couple of words because they were speaking Cherokee. And they knew that I knew because what I got out of what I did hear was she who knows, which means they were talking about me and that I knew about them. And I'm just, you know, I was amazed. I'm still amazed at that, amazed that I could figure out what they were saying. And I was like, and I do have this on tape. I'm just, and it's on my YouTube channel. It's just that the rushing waves from the creek were so loud. And so that's kind of a shame, but me and my partner did hear them. So they can speak in our language as well, but they speak in an ancient language. And I'm just going to assume for the other little indigenous people across the world that would be the same thing. They would speak to each other in their ancient, their own language, and they can speak our language as well.
Okay. So,
you got to make friends with them first.
So now, Robin McRae, I guess you would say, and speak with them, right?
Pardon?
Robin McRae, I would ask that you would say to just mind speak with them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had any problem getting them to talk. I mean, it doesn't mean every single one out there will, but you know, the ones that I've encountered, I just haven't had a problem getting them to talk. We have one that is out in Texas that we've actually been friends with, myself and my friend in Texas, for, I want to say, a good 10 years. You know, I mean, he pops in and out over there on a regular basis, and he'll talk anytime you ask for him. You know, he's taking his wife over there. He's taking his kids over there. You know, he'll get hold of either one of us if he needs this or he needs that, you know. He's really obsessed with stones. Oh, my God. He loves stones. And he's forever trying to find a certain stone. It's like he's a pack rat with them. You know, I mean,
okay.
He has his favorite ones, and if heaven forbid, he can't find them.
All right. Well, now Robin McRae, I'm going to ask you, because you spent enough time co-answering my question with Robin Moonshadow. What question do you have for Robin Moonshadow?
Well, I started to ask her earlier. I was just curious if she's noticed, you know, just a major increase in activity lately.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about this just before the show.
Yeah. Oh, it's off the charts. It's literally off the charts right now. It's like a freak zone. I mean, good Lord.
I have, for me, there's been a not so much with cryptid work, because I'm still in winter time here, and the snow is just barely off the ground, and they're not here in the winter. The three times that I did go out over the winter, I didn't even see protopygmy tracks, which is kind of strange, but they've been like that since the beginning of the pandemic here, because we go on lockdown, so people aren't acting right, so animals aren't acting right, and in turn, other things aren't going to act right. But there's just a feel in the air of like a switch being turned. Something is going on. I hope it's for the best. I haven't got my first vaccine shot, maybe next month.
Yeah, I won't get it at all. So.
No, I mean, it's just here, not to get political, but it's the whole thing has been handled very poorly. I had bears on my trail cameras this year. I've lived here for 10 years and not one bear. Bears, two of them, two young bears on my trail cameras this year.
I can't remember. All the poles have shifted. Nothing is where it's supposed to be. The energy that encompasses the earth is not where it's supposed to be right now. Everything has shifted. That causes an imbalance with everything. It doesn't matter if it's a type of a human species or if it's an animal species. And when it comes to the animals, it really sets them off because they are so much more, they use
attuned,
an energy basis more than we do. We rely on other things because we've just gotten stupid. You know, we forget the abilities that God gave us and that we should focus on, and we're doing our own thing, and we're failing miserably at all of it. But the animals are still old school, so they're more in tune with the energy. And all that has changed right now because everything has shifted. And so what happens, you're finding more aggression in a lot of animals, not because there's anything wrong with them, but because the energy that they're used to, that they're comfortable with, that they depend on, has changed.
Well, yeah, it's like when the San Francisco earthquake, when all the dogs disappeared and all the animals started disappearing and nobody knew where they went. And that happened
they knew 2 weeks beforehand.
Prior to the earthquake.
Yep.
They knew and they took off. It's like that.
Well, and it's like where you're at, you know, the Bigfoot don't leave. They simply go underground. It's that simple. They go under there. They can make fire. They know what they're doing. They're going to go where it's warm. They're going to go where there's food. Generally, prior to winter, when it gets all snowy, they've already stacked up enough deer and whatever food that particular clan is heavily into. They've got it already stacked up. I mean, they'll just sit and ride it out. I mean, everybody's like, oh, they migrate. They don't migrate. I'm sorry, people. They don't migrate. It's any different. But some of them, here's the thing. It's just like with our people. You know, you have some people that want to avoid the winter, so they go to Florida or whatever for the winter. But as a whole, it's not like, you know, the animal species that they migrate for certain times of year. Certain areas, if it's going to get nasty, they're not stupid. They'll go where it's warmer. But it's not like a true migration like you think of with animals.
No.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And there's a lot of them.
Nothing here for the ones that are here. There's nothing.
Yeah.
So
And a lot of them, there's so many tunnels that they've got underground and caverns all through there. And they will literally go, I'm not saying that all of them do that, but there are some that will actually go under there and they'll stay there throughout the winter.
Yeah,
I mean, they've got food
stores here.
They're all good to go. You won't see hide nor hair of them.
Yeah, mine go. I mean, I'm not that far from the border, so mine actually do go south. I should say mine.
Yep.
I don't own them, right? But spring and fall, this is when I get the most reports coming out of Quebec and into Vermont. And then in the spring, it's the reverse, Vermont, then Quebec. There's only one place for them to actually cross around here because of the St. Lawrence River. So mine actually go where they're supposed to go. So mine do, there I go again, mine. These ones head south. But I don't think they go that far south. They need to go where, you know, they're going to have food and shelter and water and such. And here everything is frozen solid.
Yeah. Like in Michigan, we had went to this one research. It wasn't really a research area. It was just county land. And they had caves in there. And somebody, the week before I was there, had walked in there, one of the DNR officers, and found 14 deer with the insides ripped out of them, all stacked in a nice pile at the back of this cave, and all these footprints all over the place. There were vegetation that were stored in there. They do. I mean, they can hold up in these caverns and these tunnels for months at a time. You know, I mean, they prepare. They know what they're doing. They've been living around here longer than we have. They know what they're doing. You know, and like the ones in Michigan.
Will prep winter here. The little people will prep for winter here.
Yeah.
Because they live in a hunter-gatherer way, especially the little indigenous people. They still live in that old way. So they will do the hunter-gathering and prep for winter. Because, you know, sometimes we'll get down to minus 40 here and nothing moves.
Yeah, Michigan, the last few years it's done that. They got down to, I think, the 1 year, it was like negative 55.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if it gets to negative 55, I'm going to be moving to, like, Florida.
Trey, I'll be right behind you. I guarantee.
I'd already moved. Yeah, I wouldn't be moving anymore. I'd be moving south of the border. That's for sure.
Or we'll go out there with Devin. Last few winters I've been tempted.
Exactly.
I've been tempted to become a bird.
and Robin McCray, that was a wonderful discussion. Dr. Trey Donaway, the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, what do you have to ask Robin Moonshadow? I'm sure this is going to be interesting.
Well, you know, we've been a year in this pandemic. Has the pandemic affected the little people indirectly or directly? Has it had any effect on their behavior or their ability to survive?
That's an awesome question. Yes. This is the minimum amount of activity, by mean way of footprints, that I have seen in all the time that I've been, you know, studying, researching protopygmies. They are human, so they can catch it too. And by the way, so can Bigfoot. Bigfoot
right.
can catch COVID-19, and so can the protopygmies. And protopygmies have a very long memory. They remember all the diseases and the viruses that when Europeans started coming here, like smallpox hit them very hard. And we see this by way of a story. It's a fabulous story, okay, because it's one story that leads into another story. It's the story about Moshop the Giant and how he was loved. And that's about how the Pukwudgies, who are nasty, horrible little people that you'd never want to mess with. It doesn't matter who you are. They hate us taller people, despise us, hate us with a passion. They will go out of their way to hurt us and make our life miserable. And we've seen this continuously with them. But the story says that they were jealous of Moshop the Giant, and they started carving havoc for First Nations people, and I'm really shortening this up so I can get to your question. But this is a story that leads to another story that leads to your question. So the First Nation people go and talk to Squint, who is a little person. She's a Mamegoessing. You're a little person. You know, can you please help us? They're causing havoc, causing trouble. So her and her two sons, Moshop's sons, go and help them. And the split of the story is the Pukwudgies killed the two sons. Squint goes finds Moshop, and, you know, they get rid of the Pukwudgies. They throw them all over the place, and that's why Pukwudgies are found just all over the place. Not here. Not here, though, because the native, the little indigenous people will fight with the Pukwudgies and will kill them, and so will the Maymay. They're just even hated among these other little people. Anyway, so then the story goes on to say that Moshop, being devastated by the loss of his son, he goes away, he doesn't come back. The other part is that, you know, he dies, he becomes a whale. Nicer story. But Squint, who is the little person, goes back to her people. Second story, and this is where it gets good. Second story of this is a medicine woman is in her hut. She hears the cry of a whippoorwill, and that's the son of the Mamegoessing are around. So one comes to her house and asks her for help because Squint is so sick. So they you know, they travel through the night to this cave, and they go underground, and Squint is there. And she's very sick. So the medicine woman spends a couple of days nursing Squint back to health. And for helping her, she gets a basket of herbs and shiny rocks and things like this. But so you see that there, with Squint being sick, that these things do affect them. And I know that there was a thing with a smallpox epidemic that happened in North America to all indigenous people. Because there was a study done like last April that us First Nations people are 4% likely to catch viruses like COVID quicker than non-Indigenous people.
Right, because the immune system is not familiar with it.
Yes. Yes. And with the little people, I believe it is the same. They don't have vaccines, like for even chickenpox, so they would have to treat that themselves and build up some type of immunity system. But even I've noticed, like, across the scale, that the evidence from when this started is very few. This is the least amount of evidence and the footprints, especially, that I've seen in this entire time. So, yeah, I believe it will affect them. They know what is going on, and they're just going to do what they can to stay away from us even more than usual.
So they're socially distancing from humans.
Yeah, extra good.
That's interesting. It's very interesting, Dr. Trey. That was a wonderful question.
Yeah,
it really was.
And it could be because they have no vaccines, like say we would have. They would, you know, be a bit more prone to it than us. We're around people more often, so we build up, say, immunities to certain things, like, say, the common cold. But with them, maybe a pneumonia could wipe out a family.
Okay. Trey, thank you. Devin? Do you have a question for Robin?
Kind of, just almost sort of to piggyback off what you asked, Dr. John, as far as if we'd like to try to make contact. You mentioned that, you know, we need to try to be friends first. But is there, like, an offering or something that we can do to start that, you know, make that initial contact?
Oh, well, see if they're actually in an area first, like – footprints is always a best bet. Okay, they're only about 4 inches long. That's as big as they get, and that's a male. Okay, females are about 2, and I only have one female footprint. It's 2 inches, because males are typically taller or larger than a female, and I only have one baby print here, and it's about 2 inches. And that was caught by mommy and baby together, which are just fabulous find for me. So if you want to make friends with them, first you have to build up their trust. So if you believe they're in a location, you could make like an offering rock, find a rock that's good. They like shiny things, and they love sweet stuff. Now, a friend of mine who is a Cherokee, unfortunately he's passed now, great fella. I miss him very much. And we used to have long conversations about this all the time. His mother would leave boiled eggs and toast, an offering rock, every morning. And one day, she took him with her. He was about four, maybe 5 years old. So they stood back behind the bushes and just watched. And a little person came out and ate the toast and the boiled eggs and went back into the bushes. And this was a yawn. I know I'm going to butcher this. I apologize. A yawn wee to sad little person. It was a Cherokee little person. And he was only about 2 feet tall. And he had long black hair, and it was in a braid. And he said he would remember that for the rest of his life.
Most of the time when, you know, we hear about these types of little people, you know, I think they're normally to be found like in the countryside, but because I live in an urban area where there's not much dirt, you know, it's mainly concrete, asphalt, that type of thing, you know, I think it'd be harder for me to find things like footprints. Do you have any idea of whether or not they would even live in an urban area like this, or would you have to go more out to the country to find them?
Oh, they live everywhere. We have gnomes, they're called domestic gnomes, because they live in people's houses, and most of the time people don't even know they're there. They live in the attic or in between the walls, like I say.
Okay, interesting.
high rises, or they're in an abandoned building sometimes, but they live underground. Mostly underground. It's the gnomes that are more around us more.
Okay.
But they live underground. So if you have a park, you can check at a park. And believe it or not, they do have entryways in trees. You won't see. I mean, like, you know, you see holes in trees and think some funny thought about how little people get down in there. They do that. They got lots of ways in and out of their underground home, but they have to, because they have to keep themselves safe. So they got lots of escape routes. So you can check at a park, around the trees. So for offerings, they love chocolate. They I leave offerings of granola bars. It's a bit healthy, and it has chocolate on it. Friends of mine leave shiny rocks out for the ones that they have in their area, and that is in North Carolina. And there is a lot in North Carolina. For the most part, the majority of the tracks that I've seen are little natives. And I get lots of stories of natives. Mostly the little men. I think I have two of a little female. But it's mostly the men that they see. But more southern like that, in Florida, California, you have a kind called the Paynes. Those little people are hilarious. They are habitual hoarders. They steal everything. There's stories about them, ones going back to like the first settlers, about these little people coming in and stealing things. I mean, they'll steal Christmas lights. They've been reported stealing pink flamingos. Clothes off the clothesline. Things like that, I don't know, they're having a garage sale underground or something. I don't know what they're doing with this stuff. But every time we hear these stories, they're stealing stuff. They're harmless. They're just little thieves, and they're called Paynes because they do that, even going back. The natives would talk about how they would come in and steal things. Wagon train days, people would see these little people stealing things out of their backpacks. It could be anything that they steal. It doesn't matter. Forks, plates, knives, it doesn't matter. They just steal it.
So just get the chocolate out and go. Is that the right thing to do?
Chocolate and shiny things. And talk to them. If you talk to them, like the areas I go into, I know they're there. I've seen the footprints. I'll talk to them when I go in. I'm like, hi, I'm here now. How are you all doing? Things like little things like this here, and then I will ask. You know, it'd be nice if you came out and I could talk to you. Yeah. You know, I brought you some granola bars today. Things like this. Because that is something that I'd want to do, like make physical contact with them and talk to them.
Gotcha.
Well, that sounds like an interesting course of action, and we know what to do. So those of us that wish to try it, we will. I can tell you better be careful when you go down to Robin's house. Bigfoot are all over. And honey, they'll come. Robin McCray, they'll come right out, won't they?
Yeah, they usually get into everything.
Yeah, they really are. Well, I tell you what, we've had a wonderful time tonight with Robin Moonshadow. It's been wonderful. Will you come back in about 4 to 6 weeks? We'd like to talk to you some more. We're going to have, first of all, would you come back? We'd love to have you.
Of course I'll come back. Like a boomerang.
Well, good. Number two, next week,
good.
We have Jen Cruz of the She Squatchers. And Jen is going to talk about a variety of topics, especially the sightings of the little people up in Minnesota and the dragons up there in Minnesota. She's got some wonderful stories. So, you know, we're going to do some, maybe a little bit of non-Sasquatch things with Jen Cruz, but she's always a lot of fun. Sorry she couldn't make it 2 weeks ago, but she's better now.
and we look forward to having her. And I guess I'm going to go around the room and say goodbye and let everybody give me a greeting to tell everybody. First of all, our guest, Robin Moonshadow, what greeting do you have to say to everybody on Storytel?
Yeha, noha. Many greetings and blessings upon everybody, and thanks for having me back.
Well, we're glad to have you back, and we will have you back another time here fairly soon. I'll do some talking with you, and we'll find some other topics that work really well. So thank you very much. And continuing with Ladies First, Robin McCray, thanks for being with us. What have you got to say to everybody?
Oh, it was great to be back, Robin. It was great to talk to you again. I always enjoy it.
It was great hearing from you, too. Glad you're doing so well.
Yeah, we got to talk more. If there's anything ever settles down.
Apparently not going anywhere yet for a while.
Well, that's good. So you two talk and have a great time. And Robin McCray, thank you very much. And I know you'll have a wonderful time up there in Nebraska at the Bigfoot Conference. Just approximately when is that, so that we know?
It is we're flying in on the 21st, but I think it's like the 23rd or 24th. It's the Friday and Saturday of that weekend.
Of April?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. So next month. All right, well, that's good. Tell Igor I said hello, and look forward to seeing him when he's able to get down here. So, look, thanks a lot for being here. It's always a privilege to have you here. You're just always a lot of fun, as is Robin Moonshadow. As in Devin Tate, what have you got to say to everybody?
Well, speaking of leprechauns, I know that came up on this edition of Scary Cast. I just want to thank everyone for being here and wish everyone a very happy St. Patrick's Day coming up this week. I'm not Irish, but because I'm a redhead, people always think I'm Irish. So I just kind of have taken St. Patrick's Day as like my own, you know, adopted holiday. So hopefully everyone has a safe and fun one.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate it. And it wouldn't be the same without the Surgeon General of Scary Cast, Dr. Trey Donaway. What have you got to say to everybody?
Well, you know, I really did enjoy talking about the leprechauns and the what was the other con?
Clericons.
Give me that one more time.
Clericon. Yeah,
Clericons.
Yeah.
Well, because I was a jumbo leprechaun last week at the Irish Fest of Camden. I start growing a beard in November, and the day before this festival, I shave it off and dye it orange. And I am the people in the church say you're too big to be a leprechaun. And I say, well, you know, like everything, it comes in different sizes, just small, medium, large, and jumbo. And I'm a jumbo leprechaun, and I shaved off my beard that afternoon after the festival because it was so itchy with masks. But I am hopeful that next year, St. Patrick's Day, will be a COVID-free one, and everyone just keep safe and survive to enjoy next St. Patrick's Day without COVID.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, that's great, and thank you. And this is Dr. John saying it's been a lot of fun. We'll see you next week with Jen Cruz of the She Squatchers. And everybody have a safe, COVID-free week. And we'll catch you next time on the one, the only. There's only one. Scary Cast as we build up to the 4th anniversary. Take care and have a good one.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.